Welcome to Christian Life Academy. We are in chapter 22 of Religious Worship and the Sabbath Day. And we have been working through this. This is actually, I believe, part 13, which makes it the second longest right now to the scriptures. And we have already gone through worship. We've already moved through that. We've moved on to the Sabbath Day. This is the day you've all been dreading. And we're going to talk about the purposes of the Sabbath shortly, or what you're supposed to be doing on the Sabbath. But we began by talking about the appointed day. And that has been, I think, as I mentioned, one of the issues that has divided the church. And frankly, the significant issue is the Sabbath day actually still in effect? Is there still a Sabbath day? In other words, is there a day of rest? Sabbath just means a day, just means rest. That's all it means. The Sabbath day was a day of rest. And as we worked through this last week, or last time, I should say, we talked about the fact that this was a creation mandate. And that means that it's something that was instituted at creation. This is not something that was given with the law. We see worshiping at the temple or the tabernacle. We see the sacrifices, the cleansings, all those processes that were part of the ceremonial law were given through Moses to the people of Israel. That is not true about the Sabbath. The Sabbath was a creation mandate and existed before that. Why? We see it in both the Old Testament and the New Testament. Christ actually reiterates it. And what is that? God created the earth in 6 days, and on the seventh day he rested. On the seventh day he rested. He established, we talked about the fact that that established a pattern for us. The rotation of the earth around the sun. The seasons. All of these things, even the, so that's the months, are all in the moon circling around the earth, and where it actually is positioned, is what dictates our months and years. Astronomical creation actually dictates our months and years. The week is not defined anyplace else. So why can't we just work for a whole month and then have a month off and then work for a month and then have a month off? Well, because God set the pattern for us in creation. And we mentioned the fact that, of course, it did not take God 6 days to create the earth, did it? He did it in 6 days, but did it take him 6 days? Was it impossible for him to accomplish this in one instant? No, he could have done it merely with one word from his mouth, and the entire creation would have been done. But he did it in 6 days. And one of the reasons, the significant reason that we see, and Christ actually mentions this, is that it was done as a pattern. It established a pattern for us in how we live our lives. We work 6 days, we have 1 day as rest. Now you say, well, yeah, but this is before sin. There wasn't work. Sorry, not true. Work is not as a result of sin. Adam was given multiple jobs. Those are also creation mandates. Before the fall, Adam had to work. So we look at the Sabbath, we see a creation mandate was given for man to work 6 days and to have 1 day of rest. When we get to the nation of Israel, or the children of Israel at that point, and what they are commanded to do, there are nuances added. There are nuances added. There is some explanation given. But also keep in mind, that's not the only thing that comes from creation. Why did Cain kill Abel? We talked about that. Because Abel's sacrifice was acceptable to God, Cain's was not. Primarily because it was his heart. His heart had an issue. But here we see, before God has shown any, given the law, he hasn't come down, or called anybody Mount Sinai, his Ten Commandments haven't been written, he hasn't had, the Urim and the Thummim aren't even around. They're around someplace because they're rocks. But anyway, you know what I'm saying? And yet, they know they need to sacrifice to God. Sacrifices existed before the law. So when we talk about the Sabbath, we talk about the fact that it has existed before that. Now the argument is that because of Christ, the Sabbath is no more. The Sabbath doesn't exist anymore. Now there are multiple problems with that. We started working through some of them. We're going to cover some more here today. But we do have to remember that if God has the power and the authority to declare what day of the week the Sabbath is, he can change it. He can change it. Now, interestingly enough, and we're going to cover this as probably the last point of this section, there is some contention even about that, about when did God appoint the day? So we'll talk about that and where that comes in. Now, one of the compromises, and I'm going to back up here in a couple of slides, one of the compromise positions that has emerged is that God does demand a day, but he doesn't care which day. He doesn't care which day. That doesn't match Scripture. God does care, and he showed us in his word. Now, here's the issue with that, particularly with that concept. If it's a day and God doesn't care, then God is really not dictating what the Sabbath should be anymore. Are you with me on this? In other words, now it's not up to God, it's up to us. We get to decide what the Sabbath is. Now, that's a problem. Now, we're going to talk about some other issues about this, and you'll see that this is, I wish I could just tell you that it's all very, very clear cut. It's not. It's not. There are things that we have to make decisions about, especially when we talk about what we should or should not be doing on the Sabbath, that really are up to us. And here is the issue. It's about your heart. It's not about the letter of the law. It's about your heart. What is your heart focused on? What are we supposed to be doing? How does this work? Are we ignoring it? Then I did this quote, read this quote from B.B. Warfield, and we're going to start by reading this quote today and then continue on in the notes. Because the Sabbath was made for man, he, the Son of Man, to whom has been given dominion and glory and a kingdom that all peoples, nations, and languages should serve him, who reigns by right over man and all things which concern men, is Lord also of the Sabbath. How do we know that? He said so. There are obviously two sides to the declaration. The Sabbath, on the one hand, is the Lord's day. It's his. It belongs to him. He's the Lord of it, master of it. For that's what the Lords mean, the Lord. He's over it. He may do with it what he will. Abolish it if he chooses. Though abolishing it as far as possible is as far as possible from the suggestion of the passage. He can regulate it. He can adapt it to the changing circumstances of human life for the benefit of which it was made. On the other hand, just because it's the Lord's day, it is nobody else's day. It is not man's day. It is not in the power of man. To say that the Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath is to withdraw it from the control of men. It is to reserve to the Son of Man all authority over it. It is not man, but the Son of Man who is Lord of the Sabbath. Does that make sense? It's not up to man. Christ called himself the Lord of the Sabbath. All right. So continuing on in his institution, the resurrection set a new pattern. The remainder of the New Testament, the Lord appeared to the apostles on Sunday. The day of Pentecost was on a Sunday. The apostles and the early church met on the first day of the week, which is called the Lord's Day. So we see a pattern after the resurrection. Every time we see the church gathered together, it's a Sunday. Every time. There's no exceptions. The change of the day does not affect the essence of what the Sabbath is, which is simply one day out of seven for rest and worship. Were the people of Israel commanded in the fourth commandment to rest on Saturday? No. No, they weren't. We're going to look at what the fourth commandment actually says. It does not say that. Don't you normally think that? It's not what it says. Not what the text says at all. We'll read it. Several early church fathers wrote of the church meeting on the first day of the week, calling it the Lord's Day, including Ignatius, Justin Martyr, Clement of Alexandria, Tertullian, all wrote that that's when they gathered. They gathered on the Lord's Day. The Lord's Day is a distinct term, only used in Revelation in the Scripture. Does Revelation tell us what day that is? It does. The form means that it is the day belonging to the Lord. It's the Lord's day. It's a day belonging to Him. And who is He? Is there any references that we have in the New Testament to Christ as having any other day? No, just the Lord of the Sabbath. The Lord of the Sabbath. Some argue that the very term Sabbath means the Jewish traditions. I don't know if you've heard that before. Some will say, well, Sabbath is Jewish. That's all Jewish. However, the early church didn't use the term Sabbath. Instead, they used the Lord's Day. which separated it from the Jewish traditions. However, the Lord's Day was always recognized as the Christian Sabbath. Even the early church fathers wrote that we met on the Lord's Day, the Christian Sabbath. Arthur Pink, writing on the Christian Sabbath, said, "Our inquiry then narrows itself down to this. Does God require His people to keep a Sabbath during this Christian dispensation? During this time, does God require His people to keep a Sabbath? If He does, then such a Sabbath is, necessarily, a Christian Sabbath. If He does not, then that's the end of the matter. It's not worth talking about." The difficulty of identifying positively the change from the creation mandate of the seventh day of rest in creation to the first or eighth day is exemplified in how God designated the original Sabbath. The Sabbath of creation was instituted to recognize that God rested from creation. The Lord's Day, or Christian Sabbath, recognizes that Christ's work of redemption was done. And He entered into the rest of His resurrection glory. What day did that happen? Sunday. As the creation Sabbath recognizes the old work of creation, the new Sabbath recognizes the new creation. Do you see this? The second commandment, no idols, which we've talked about through this chapter, right? Clearly established that God cares about how we worship. After the law was given to Israel, worship had to be conducted at the temple, right? After Christ and His work, we no longer have to bring sacrifices to the temple, do we? We believe that Christ's work changed the way we worship, as Christ Himself said it would. Remember the woman at the well in Samaria? Says it's going to change. We talked about that. But to suggest that somehow now God doesn't care how we worship would be to suggest that the second commandment is now null and void. Isn't it? So think about that for a second. Do you think that now it's okay for us to have idols? I mean, actually, most Christians, evangelical Christians, kind of vehemently believe that that's the case, that we can't do that. Like many churches would say, you can't have any caricature of Jesus on the wall. Right? Why? Don't want it to be an idol. Don't want it to be an idol. There's no other scriptural mandate that covers that. That does, though, right? You don't want to worship that. Now, by the way, if you read the commandment, it says you can't create something and bow down to worship it. And it's not just God, it's anything, right? Creatures on the earth, creatures under the earth, they're all listed. Here's the point. We don't think that's gone. We still think that's true. It's not okay for us to, even though maybe, for us to make a statue of your dog and then just sit there and talk about worship it, how cute it is all day long and everything else, right? That's not okay. To honor it, to pray to it. That's right? We don't agree. That's not okay, right? Why? God forbid it. Second commandment. We recognize that God cares about how we worship, and that's part of that, isn't it? Yeah. So, if He cares about how we worship, why would we think that somehow He no longer cares about when we worship? John Murray. Always loved John Murray's quotes. Here's what he wrote. "The controversy that has turned on the question as to whether or not in the Christian dispensation the Sabbath is the first day of the week or the seventh, and as to whether we can be said to observe the fourth commandment when we substitute the first day of the week for the seventh, has too often been allowed to obscure the central principle, namely, that every recurring seventh day was by divine ordination distinguished from every other day. The difficulty that may be encountered in determining which day of the week is, the Sabbath should never be used as a subterfuge to escape from the central and straightforward import of the commandment that every recurring seventh day is specifically holy to God." That's the issue. So, we talked about this last week. As you know, I've said it many times, I don't care for labels. I don't like that. Usually we come up with a label for somebody else, then we have to somehow come up with a label for ourselves. So, but this is truly the case here. Sabbatarians and non-Sabbatarians. I think I mentioned this a couple weeks ago. Non-Sabbatarians believe there's no more Sabbath. Sabbatarians believe there still is a Sabbath. That's us. Our doctrine, our confession, embrace the idea that there is still a Christian Sabbath. This is the issue. What he's saying is the issue. Non-Sabbatarians don't want to say that there's a day they're supposed to keep holy anymore. They'll argue about the day, but it's not an argument about the day. It's an argument that they don't want to do to set one's day aside. They want to have the freedom to use that day however they want to. Now, this is the struggle in our own hearts. The struggle in our own lives. But that's where it comes down. The fourth commandment actually does not dictate the day of the week. Most believers assume that it does, but it does not. It actually says that the Sabbath day is the day after 6 days of work. We know clearly, by the time of Christ, the Sabbath was observed on Saturday, right? We know that. By the time of Christ, the Sabbath is observed on Saturday. But we're not sure when it began on that day. We're not sure. Some scholars believe that it may have been a result of when God gave manna to Israel and commanded that on the sixth day they should gather twice as much for the Sabbath. That's in Exodus 16. Exodus 16. Way after the law. This would essentially mean that in the old covenant, the day was specified by God giving manna for the people to live. In the new covenant, it was specified by God giving a Savior and resurrection and resurrecting Him so that the people could live eternally. Hebrews has a significant passage on the Sabbath. Hebrews 3, verses 17 through Hebrews 4, 13. We're not going to read through it. It begins by speaking about the rest the people of Israel were denied in the Promised Land. Moses couldn't enter that rest. The people could not enter into that rest. But it makes a clear statement about that there still being a Sabbath today. And there's books written about that passage. We're not going to go that deep into it. We're going to read the few key verses that talk about there still being a rest for Christians today. Not in the future, but today. Arthur W. Pink wrote about this passage. Here's what he said. Here, then, is a plain, positive, unequivocal declaration by the Spirit of God. There remaineth, therefore, a Sabbath keeping. Doesn't get much clearer than that. Nothing could be simpler, nothing less ambiguous. The striking thing is that this statement occurs in the very epistle whose theme is the superiority of Christianity over Judaism. That's Hebrews. Written to those addressed as holy brethren, partakers of the heavenly calling. Therefore, it cannot be gainsaid that Hebrews 4:9 refers directly to the Christian Sabbath. Hence, we solemnly and emphatically declare that any man who says there is no Christian Sabbath takes direct issue with the New Testament Scriptures. Hebrews says there's one. Let's look at some verses. Exodus chapter 20, verses 8 through 11. This is the Sabbath. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days shalt thou labor and do all thy work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord thy God. In it thou shalt not do any work, thou, nor thy son, nor thy daughter, thy manservant, nor thy maidservant, nor thy cattle, nor thy stranger that is within thy gates. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea and all that is in them, and rested the seventh day. Wherefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it. The next section, we're going to get a little bit deeper into that passage. But notice, this: there's no ambiguity on this. It says, who's supposed to rest? Everyone. And the animals. In other words, you can't say, well, I'm just going to ride on my horse. I'm not doing any work. I'm just riding. He says, no, not your cattle. Not your animals. No work. 1 Corinthians 6, 1 and 2. Now concerning the collection for the saints, as I have given order to the churches of Galatia, even so do ye. Upon the first day of the week, Let every one of you lay by him in store as God hath prospered him, that there be no gatherings when I come. What's he saying? He's saying when you gather on the first day of the week, make your offerings. So that you're not gathering it when I get there. It's not you keep it personally. It's gather it together at the church, because when I get there, let's not try to get everybody to gather it then. Acts 27, and upon the first day of the week, when the disciples came together to break bread, Paul preached unto them, ready to depart on the morrow, and continued his speech until midnight. Now, you know what happens in that passage, right? The guy falls out of the window. That happens there. And that was a long message. There's no question about that. At any rate, when would it happen, though? First day of the week. And in fact, that's almost ancillary to it. When they gathered together to break bread, that Paul preached. Revelation 1:10. I was in the Spirit on the Lord's day and heard behind me a great voice as of a trumpet. Of course, you recognize that passage. The only place it's mentioned, that's where John says it. But let's back up. Deuteronomy 5, verses 12 through... Actually, let's go back to Genesis 2 first. Genesis 2, verses 1 through 3. Thus the heavens and earth were finished, and all the host of them. And on the seventh day, God ended his work which he had made, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work which he had made. And God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, because that in it he had rested from all his work which God created and made. What does it mean to sanctify something? Our sanctuary. We are in sanctification mode. We're becoming more sanctified. What does it mean? Set apart. God set apart the seventh day. That's what it says. Genesis 2. Where do you want to start? Let's start at the beginning. Genesis 2. God said he sanctifies it. Deuteronomy 5, verses 12 through 15. Keep the Sabbath day to sanctify it, as the Lord thy God hath commanded thee. 6 days shalt thou labor and do all thy work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath day of the Lord thy God. And it shall not do, shall in it thou shalt not do any work, thou, nor thy son, nor thy daughter, nor thy manservant, nor thy maidservant, nor thine ox, nor thine ass, nor any of thy cattle. Just in case you're confused on the last time when he said cattle. Now we're going to lay it all out. Nor thy stranger that is within thy gates, that thy manservant and thy maidservant may rest as well as thou. And remember that thou wast a servant in the land of Egypt, and that the Lord thy God brought thee out thence through a mighty hand, and by a stretched out arm. Therefore the Lord thy God commanded thee to keep the Sabbath day. Remember, that what were the people of Israel forced to do as a result of Moses coming to Pharaoh? What were they forced to do on the Sabbath? Work. They were forced to work. They were forced to work. He's reminding them, look, I brought you out with a mighty arm. I brought you out of that. Now keep the Sabbath, like you're supposed to be doing. Matthew 19, verses 3 through 6. The Pharisees also came unto him, tempting him, and saying unto him, is it lawful for a man to put away his wife for every cause? And he answered and said unto them, have ye not read that he which made them at the beginning made them male and female? And they said, for this cause shall a man leave his father and mother, and shall cleave to his wife, and they shall twain shall be one flesh. Wherefore, there are no more twain, but one flesh. Wherefore, God hath joined together, let no man put asunder. Now you say, well, that's not talking about the Sabbath there. You're right, it's not. But what Christ is doing is he's not going back to the Old Testament law about how men and women should be together. He's going back to Genesis. He's going back to the beginning and saying God created man and female and put them together. What God has joined, no one should take apart. You know what he's saying? He's saying this is not about what God allowed you due to the hardness of your hearts in Moses' law. This is supposed to go back all the way to creation. That's how God intended it to be. Do you see this? In other words, you don't see Christ. We're going to see another quote from Christ here in just a moment. You don't see Christ just basing all his statements on what was written in the Old Testament. What was in the law of Moses. He goes back to creation. When it's applicable. John 21. 20, verse 1. The first day of the week cometh Mary Magdalene early, when it was yet dark, unto the sepulchre, and seeth the stone taken away from the sepulchre. Of course, it's a common passage. Obviously, we celebrate Resurrection Sunday as a Sunday. That's when he actually rose. John 20:19. Then the same day at evening, same chapter, later, same day at evening, being the first day of the week, just in case you'd missed that, When the doors were shut where the disciples were assembled for fear of the Jews, came Jesus and stood in their midst and saith unto them, Peace be unto you. So Jesus' first appearance to the disciples was same day he rose, first day of the week. Mark 2:23. And it came to pass that when he went through the cornfields on the Sabbath day, and his disciples began as they went to pluck the ears of corn, and the Pharisees said unto him, Behold, why do they on the Sabbath day that which is not lawful? And he said unto them, Have you never read what David did when he had need and was hungered, he and they that were with him? How he went into the house of God in the days of Abiathar, the high priest, and did eat the showbread, which is not lawful to eat but for the priests, and gave also to them which were with him? And he said unto them, The Sabbath was made for man, and not man for the Sabbath. Therefore, the Son of Man is the Lord also of the Sabbath. This is where he claims that title. He's the Lord of the Sabbath. Now, what were the Pharisees saying? What was their argument? The argument was is that they had said it was illegal for them to gather that wheat as they walked through the field. Now, first of all, it wasn't considered stealing because that was actually according to the law. The law said that when a farmer would harvest his field, he would leave the extra. In fact, even in the corners of the field, he would leave that for travelers or poor people that are in the area that travel through that area, that they can actually gather that and eat that. So that was lawful that it was there and that they could do that. The issue wasn't that. The Pharisees had added to the law. The law didn't say they couldn't do that. They had added to it. And so he's saying, well, don't you remember that that's what David did? See, the point was is that you do what's necessary, not what the Pharisees say. Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. Does that make sense? God sanctified it. He set it apart for our benefit, not because he needed it, because we needed it. 1 Corinthians 11, verses 3 through 9. You can turn to that if you want to, because it is a little bit of a longer passage. It's a familiar passage. But I would have you know that the head of every man is Christ, and the head of the woman is the man, and the head of Christ is God. Every man praying or prophesying, having his head covered, dishonoreth his head. But every woman that prayeth or prophesieth with her head uncovered, dishonoreth her head. For that is even all one, as if she were shaven. For if the woman be not covered, let her also be shorn. But if it be a shame for a woman to be shorn or shaven, let her be covered. Which it was, of course. For a man indeed ought not to cover his head, for as much as he is the image and glory of God. But the woman is the glory of man. For the man is not of the woman, but the woman of the man. Neither was the man created for the woman, but the woman for the man. Okay, what's that have to do with the Sabbath? Notice the intricacy of the requirements for how men and women are to partake in worship. That's what this passage is about. This passage is not at home. This passage is in worship. The point is, God cares about how we worship, and this is a New Testament passage that's talking about how we're supposed to worship. See, when we see a lot of people that say, oh, the Sabbath doesn't count anymore, we have Christian liberty, we can do whatever we want to. Well, what about this passage? What about the passage that says that we're to be modest in worship? What about that? That's in the New Testament. God still cares how he's worshipped. God still cares. 1 Timothy 2, verses 12 and 13. But I suffer not a woman to teach, nor to usurp authority over the man, but to be in silence, for Adam was first formed, then Eve. Again, now it's about teaching. Does God care about how we teach in worship? He does. By the way, you cannot avoid that passage for women pastors. It's forbidden. That's it. That's all there is to it. Here's how people will get around it. I've told you before, every single time you hear this, it should be a red flag to you. That was cultural. It's a red flag, not a black flag. Black flag, stop on the spot. Red flag, you better pull over. Something bad is going on. So that's a red flag. Are there things that are cultural that are a little bit hard for us to understand in the Scripture? So we need a little bit of a little bit of understanding about what that meant. You know, do any of you talk normally every day about shekels? Probably not. So you probably need some reminder about what a shekel is. But you see the point. When someone tries to take scriptural truths and just say, that's just cultural, that's a red flag. They better have something to back that up. There's two passages that talk about the role and relationship of men and women in worship. God cares. God cares. Hebrews 4, verses 9 through 11. There remaineth therefore a rest to the people of God. For he that has entered into his rest, he also has ceased from his own works, as God did from his. Let us labor therefore to enter into that rest, lest any man fall after the same example of unbelief. Now, without going further into that passage, that's the one that I was talking about, which talks about the fact that there is a rest, there remains a rest for the people of God. All right. Now moving on. It's sanctification. In other words, the first was its appointment that there is a Sabbath, still today. The second is its sanctification. How do we set it apart? What do we need to do to set apart the Sabbath? Since we've seen all these passages in the Scripture about the Sabbath being sanctified, the Sabbath to be holy, both at creation, in the New Covenant, in the Old Covenant, we see that. Now, we need to talk about what does that look like? The part you've been dreading. Okay. Here's what the confession says. The Sabbath is then kept holy unto the Lord when men, after a due preparing of their hearts and ordering their common affairs aforehand, do not only observe a holy rest all day from their own works, words, and thoughts about their worldly employment and recreations, but are also taken up the whole time in the public and private exercises of his worship and in the duties of necessity and mercy. Okay, so it's a lot to unpack, but we're going to unpack it. First of all, we already said the word Sabbath means rest. The word Sabbath means rest. We must note that there is a spiritual worship element to our rest. We rest from our work and normal daily affairs, and in that rest, we also worship. We saw those passages, we just read a minute ago, about God sanctifying the Sabbath to himself. To himself. This day is to be kept holy unto the Lord. So now you remember how we do this, when you see in italics, that is usually a reference to the actual text of the confession. So the Sabbath is to be kept holy unto the Lord. It is a day focused on him, not on our rest, recreation, and other activities. This is what we were talking about before the class, right? It's more about the heart and about what we're focused on. Note, the Sabbath is to be kept after a due preparing of their hearts. After a due preparing of their hearts and ordering their common affairs aforehand. What's that mean? Well, this reflects the necessity of preparing ourselves before the Sabbath so that we can focus on what we should without distractions. Right now you're starting to feel a little bit like, okay, all right. Observe a holy day at rest all day means that this is not just a regular day off. It is a holy rest. It's not like a vacation or a free day. It is a holy day of rest. Also, it is all day, not just during the morning worship service. It's the Lord's day, not the Lord's portion of a day. Not the Lord's 3 hours, 2 hours. Today, probably 5 hours. Not that. No, I'm just kidding. We're not going until three. Two, not three. Anyway, we should remember that a day, as exemplified through the Scriptures, was 24 hours. It was not 8 to 12 hours. A day was 24 hours. Consideration should be given to Saturday evening as well, so we can truly be prepared to worship on Sunday. How often do you think about that? That includes proper rest. Look, if you're staying on Saturday night till 3 in the morning watching a movie, that's not proper preparation. You have to have rest. Why? So you don't fall asleep. Anybody else struggle with that? Don't raise your hands. I know all of you. I'm up here. I see. That includes proper rest, confession, preparing for Sunday meals, clothing, gas in the car, etc. That does not mean that we can include Saturday evening as part of the Sabbath when we're doing all those things that isn't rest. So you can't start Saturday and say, okay, you know what? We're going to get the meal put together, put it in the fridge, ready to eat, get my clothes out. Oh, got to iron this shirt, right? I better run over to the gas station real quick, get some gas, 10 o'clock at night. Well, our Sabbath started at sundown. No, it didn't. Those were preparation things. Are you with me on this? So the question comes up. Do we start the Sabbath at sundown on Saturday? Or is it midnight? Or what is it? I can't tell you that. Sorry. Why? It's a day. It's a day. If you start that day at 12 a.m. till 12 midnight, right? 11:59 p.m. that day, and that's your day, that's your day. The point is, God said to set aside a day for rest and worship. That's the point. If you say, well, we like to begin Saturday evening with prayer and with reading the scriptures and then, you know, go to bed and get up the next morning. Okay. Then when do you need to go to? Probably the same time 24 hours later. That would be a day. Are you with me on this? Now, it's not about, man, when can we go do something? Because it's 23 hours and 45 minutes. When can we go do, you know what I'm saying? I can't go to the grocery store for another 15 minutes. That's not it. It's about the heart. It's about the heart. So it's about setting aside that day that you can focus on rest and on worship. Notice what it said. That passage we read in the Old Testament, and he's talking to the people of Israel. He clarifies some of this, doesn't he? Not you, not your kids, not the visitors, not your servants, not any of the animals. Everybody rests. By the way, this is a scriptural principle. It's not just for man and the rest. We see this. What about the land? What did God say about the land? The people that are farming the lands, what are they supposed to do every seventh year? Let it go fallow. Let it go. Let the land literally rest. Now, we know scientifically, you know, we confirm after God says it, that that's actually really good. The nitrogen levels build back up in the soil. Other things happen in the soil. That's good for the dirt. It actually does help the land to produce better. It's almost like God knew what he was talking about, isn't it? This principle is not just that. What about debts? What are you supposed to do with debts on the seventh year? Forgive them. Forgive them. It's a rest from man servicing the debt. So we have to be real careful when we start trying to justify something. Well, I still need to do that. Doesn't matter if it's a Sunday or not. I mentioned it before. I knew somebody that every Sunday evening had to go to the grocery store. That's what they did. People that I knew in the church. So you want to go out after church? Fellowship together? Break bread together? What would they say? No, we go grocery shop on Sunday nights. Okay, well, if we're looking at what the confession of the scriptures say, that wasn't right. Now, let's not get too far down this path, right? Because like I said, it's more about your heart and not about the letter of the law. So what if you get up on Sunday morning and you realize, I didn't get gas yesterday. We're not going to make it to church. You should get gas. That would be a work of necessity. Right? We'll see a passage of Christ talking about what happens if a sheep is lost. What happens if your donkey's in the ditch? Right? You're not going to leave it there for a day. Are you with me on this? It's more about intention. And what's your intention? If you say, well, I don't want to take the time out of my... I've got stuff going on Saturday night. You know, we like to do whatever on Saturday night. So I don't want to take time to get my clothes ready and all that other stuff. You know, we just do it Sunday morning. You're not resting. It's a bad intent. You're not resting. Our Sabbath should be a rest from our own works, words, and thought about our worldly employment and recreations. Here's a tough one. But we love playing croquet every Sunday afternoon. Indeed, we are to take up the whole time in the public and private exercises of his worship and the duties of necessity and mercy. That's what the paragraph says. Part of us always wants to do other things. Why? Because we love those things. Those things are a distraction from what God demands that we do, even sometimes making spiritual conversations difficult. What am I talking about? Well, we play a board game every Sunday afternoon, but somebody wants to talk about the message. Hey, it's your turn. Hey, it's your turn. Oh, no. See how it distracts? What's the focus? The board game. It's not what God laid on your heart. It makes it difficult sometimes. People feel awkward about it. Look, I think one of the best things that we can do at this church, right now, on this time, is host speakers at your house. Because I'm hungry. No. Host speakers at your house. Now, why do I say that? Because, you know what? It feels natural to talk about spiritual things with them. You've all had them over. Doesn't it feel that way? It feels natural to talk about spiritual things with them. And you know what? It feels like right. Because it is. Because it is right. The prohibition of the scriptures of these other things are so that our minds are not drawn to them, but they are focused on rest and spiritual things. The Sabbath is a rest of our minds as well as our bodies. Look, you've got this issue you're dealing with at work, and it's on your mind all the time. On the Sabbath day, you should not think about it anymore. Your car's in the shop. The transmission is out again. That's too close to reality. You don't worry about it. You're not shopping for a car on Sunday. You're not thinking about it on Sunday. Why? It's distracting you. Look, you know, my message this morning and this evening is spiritual warfare again, right? You know what happens every time I preach a message on spiritual warfare? Bad things happen. Do you know how tempting it was for me as I'm working on this message to be distracted by 1,000 other things? Like somebody's calling me, somebody's sending me urgent emails, right? All this stuff. Distractions. If you intentionally are trying to focus on rest and worship, the distractions will not affect you as much. But if you're not paying attention, they will easily distract you all day. All day. Now, I'm fall on my own sword. I'll be the first to admit to you that there's many times that I found Sunday afternoon as a way that I can catch up on some things. Well, I'm going to try not to do that anymore. Why? The scripture says I shouldn't. That's why. It was convenient. I'm busy. Anybody not busy? Who's not busy? I got some stuff I want to give to you. Right? Sunday afternoon. Well, I like to have a nap to rest, but if I have to, I'll skip the nap and work on the car. Can some stuff. Go to the store. I hope that's a little convicting to you. It's convicting to me. Sundays are to be taken up. Look, let me just pause on that for a second. It's the rest of our minds as well as our bodies, right? So, I mean, look, when you're sitting right here and you're listening to God's word, you go upstairs this evening, all those times, right? Essentially, your body is resting. You're not actively, you know, digging a ditch. Are you with me on this? And when you go home, many people take a nap on Sunday. Some don't. Some do. Or this will relax. They'll rest. That's good. But it has to be your mind, too. Has to be your mind, too. Look, if you go home today and you start looking at the Epoch Times or wherever you look about what's going on in the election, you're not resting your mind. Are you with me on this? And look, I gotta say, Stu, I'm sorry. You know, we blew it this morning right off the bat, didn't we? Because we started talking about the election. Isn't it easy? It's really easy. So now all of a sudden our focus shifted from spiritual things, church, worship, to something else. Right? Sundays are to be taken up with reading and preaching of the word, worshiping God, fellowshipping with God's people, and resting. The focus of our Sabbath must be on God and not our own needs and desires. It is all too easy to consider anything a necessity. Okay, this gets a little more, you know, we're upping the pain level as we go. But that is certainly not true if we're preparing ourselves as we should before Sunday. Again, the focus should be, what is the Spirit speaking to us? Or are we calling necessary what we simply want to do? We must be careful in this because the Sabbath teachings in law are very clear. And this was in a largely agrarian culture that meant no feeding or tending to animals. They didn't do it on the Sabbath. They weren't allowed. They couldn't milk the cow on the Sabbath. Weren't allowed. They didn't feed the animals on the Sabbath. Weren't allowed. They put a double portion down on Saturday. That's what the law says. That's what they did. Well, yeah, but they're still hungry. They're supposed to rest. Argue with God, not with me. These are things we might view as necessary, but they are not according to God. And He sets the rules. They are the normal daily work, and that was specifically what was forbidden on the Sabbath. So you say, well, if I don't water my plants on Sunday, they're going to die. I'm sorry, but that's you saying that God isn't in charge. That's what it is. You think God honors you more for disobeying His command and working on the Sabbath on the same thing you do every day, or does He honor you by honoring Him? Are we excited about what we can accomplish or what God accomplishes through us? The duties of the priests, and now the pastors and other workers in the church, are considered necessary. Why? Because they must be done to facilitate the worship of God and the fellowship of believers. These are specifically referred to, by the way, as acts of piety. Now, pause for a second. What does that mean? That means we have fellowship Sunday. The dishes need to be cleaned up. The tables need to be moved. The floor needs to be cleaned. Right? Are those okay? They are. They're part of the fellowship. By the way, most pastors, that, like the priests, they actually have a different day of the week that they rest. Why? Because they're not resting on the Sabbath. They're not resting on the Lord's day. They're working. So they take another day to rest. Because they need the rest too. Does that make sense? Duties of mercy. We also mentioned necessity and mercy. Duties of mercy include helping others that are in need, as Christ did by healing the lame man. Remember that? Pharisees criticized Him because He healed the lame man on a Saturday. But if our mercy can be exhibited other days of the week, it should not be relegated to Sunday. Unless, in other words, like, look, if you say, well, on Sunday afternoon we like to go to the soup kitchen and help serve meals. Okay. Can you do it on Saturday? Or you say, well, somebody has to serve them. That's a good point. Is that what you do every week? If you do, then maybe you should have another day of rest. Oh, well, wait a minute, I can't take another day. What's the Spirit telling you? That's what you should ask. What's the Spirit telling you? I'm not telling you to go. Don't go serve at the soup kitchen. I'm not saying that. Because I can't. That's between you and God. You just need to think about it. Just need to consider it. Right? Look. Windy today. Right? Windy today. A tree falls and crashes through your roof and causes a hole. Would patching the hole up be a work of necessity? Yes, it would. Right? It would. If the tree falls in your yard and needs to be cut up, would cutting up the tree then be a work of necessity? Arguably not, because it could wait. Do you see what I mean? That's how we should be thinking about it. That's how we should be thinking about it. The Scriptures do not give us a list of do's and don'ts for the Sabbath. This is usually what people want. I don't know if that's what you wanted, but that's usually what people want. It's much easier to just do what you are told instead of praying and being sensitive to the leading of the Spirit, even if difficult, in your life. This was why the Pharisees created a whole bunch of prohibitions in an attempt to answer the questions of what's okay and what's not okay. So what do? They come up with a whole bunch of rules. And they say, well, this is what's okay and what's not okay. People say, well, can I do this? Can I do that? Can I do that? Instead of them just trying to be led by the Spirit of God, right, and sometimes being wrong, they wanted a distinct answer. So the Pharisees gave it to them. Through this, they were usurping God's authority to speak to his people and convict them personally. Think about that. When they did that, they were then assuming God's authority and saying, you can't do this. You can only go this far. You can't do that. You must do this. You see? Overall, we must remember that the Sabbath is not something we should view as a day of things we can't do. That's not how we should view the Sabbath. But instead, a day that is set aside for our rest and to focus our relationship with God. So that's how we should look at it. What is the purpose of the Lord's Day, the Sabbath, our Christian Sabbath? It is to be a day of rest and a day of worshiping God. And if you take that and apply it to everything that you consider of should I do this or not on the Sabbath, you're good. And by the way, does that mean that we're all going to come up with the same answers? No. No. Why? We're all at different levels of sanctification, aren't we? Right? We're all at different levels of sanctification. We're at different places in our growth. So we actually will grow more like Christ as time progresses. That's what we're supposed to do as believers. Which means that things like the Sabbath, which were very easy to struggle with, as we try to do better, we will do better. We will grow more. But don't get to the point where you are perfectly keeping the Sabbath by focusing completely on God and then criticize somebody else who's not. Help them. Make sure they understand what they should be focused on. But don't convict them because they're not where you're at yet. Does that make sense? I'm not there either. I don't know anybody that's doing it perfectly. But I do know people, and I've known people, that really did try hard to keep the Sabbath holy unto God. Let's look at some verses. Isaiah 58, verses 13 and 14. This is one of the key passages that we get where we get what we should or should not do on the Sabbath. Isaiah 53, verses 13 and 14. Pardon me? Isaiah 58, 13 and 14. Sorry. Okay. If thou turn away thy foot from the Sabbath, from doing thy pleasure on my holy day, and call the Sabbath a delight, the holy of the Lord, honorable, and shalt honor him, not doing thine own ways, nor finding thy own pleasure, nor speaking thine own words, then shalt thou delight thyself in the Lord, and I will cause thee to ride upon the high places of the earth, and feed thee with the heritage of Jacob thy father, for the mouth of the Lord hath spoken it. So notice, I read 14 because that verse is actually the reward for doing the right thing on the Sabbath. What does he say? Look at part B of verse 13. Shalt honor him not doing thy own ways, nor finding thy own pleasure, nor speaking thy own words. You know what he's saying? He's saying it's not about you and about your life and about things you're doing. You got to focus on God. If you focus on me, honor me, you're going to get a reward. That's what God intends for us on the Sabbath. Nehemiah. If you could turn to that, that would be great. Nehemiah, chapter 13, we're going to read 15 through 22. Then we're going to flip over to Matthew 12, verses 1 through 13. And I'm going to read them myself so we can move a little faster, because these are the last two verses of this entire chapter, or the last two passages, and then we're done with this chapter 22. Nehemiah 13:15. In those days saw I in Judah some treading wine presses on the Sabbath, and bringing in sheaves, and lading asses, and also wine, grapes, and figs, and all manner of burdens, which they brought into Jerusalem on the Sabbath day, and I testified against them in the day wherein they sold victuals, or victuals. There dwelt men of Tyre also therein, which brought fish and all manner of ware, and sold on the Sabbath day unto the children of Judah and in Jerusalem. Then I contended with the nobles of Judah, and said unto them, What evil thing is this that ye do, and profane the Sabbath day? Did not your fathers thus, and did not our God bring all this evil upon us and upon this city? Yet ye bring more wrath upon Israel by profaning the Sabbath. And it came to pass that when the gates of Jerusalem began to be dark before the Sabbath, I commanded that the gates should be shut, and charged that they should not be opened till after the Sabbath. And some of my servants set at eye at the gates, that there should no burden be brought in on the Sabbath day. So the merchants and sellers of all kinds of wares lodged without Jerusalem once or twice. Then I testified against them and said unto them, Why lodge ye about the wall? If you do so again, I will lay hands on you. From that time forth came they no more on the Sabbath. And I commanded the Levites that they should cleanse themselves, and that they should come and keep the gates to sanctify the Sabbath day. Remember me, O my God, concerning this also, and spare me according to the greatness of thy mercy. What is he saying? He's saying, look, don't you remember that we profaned the Sabbath and God brought judgment on us, and now you're doing it again? And then what's he do? He takes some of his servants, he forces the gate to be shut for the whole Sabbath, and then these merchants, they come and they camp outside. Well, we'll just wait right here. He says, no. You shouldn't even be here. It's the Sabbath. You come again, I'm going to lay hands on you. That means he's going to get them, so they don't come back. Then he charges the Levites, the priests, look, you're going to have to do this. Keep this day set apart. Matthew 12, verses 1 through 13. At that time Jesus went on the Sabbath day through the corn, and his disciples were hungered and began to pluck the ears of corn and to eat. But the Pharisees saw it, and they said unto him, Behold, the disciples do that. You remember we read this part. The disciples do that which is not lawful to do upon the Sabbath day. But he said unto them, Have ye not read what David did when he was hungered, and when they that were with him? How he entered into the house of God and did eat the showbread, which was not lawful for him to eat, neither for them which were with him, but only for the priests? Or have ye not read in the law how that on the Sabbath day the priests in the temple profane the Sabbath and are blameless? See, so this is more than what we looked at earlier, right? The priests are working on the Sabbath, but they're blameless. But I say unto you that in this place is one greater than the temple. If ye had known what this meaneth, I will have mercy and not sacrifice, ye would not have condemned the guiltless. For the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath day. And when he was departed thence, he went into their synagogue, and behold, there was a man which had his hand withered. And they asked him, saying, Is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath day, that they also may accuse him? And he said unto them, What man shall there be among you that shall have one sheep, and if it fall into a pit on the Sabbath day, he will not lay hold on it and lift it out? How much then is a man better than a sheep? Wherefore is it lawful to do well on the Sabbath days? Then saith he to the man, Stretch forth thy hand. And he stretched it forth, and it was restored whole, like as the other. So this defines works of mercy, works of necessity, what our focus should be. I hope this gives you some clarity in this issue. It certainly is one that can be divisive, but just remember what our focus is to be on: God, and rest in him.